Hello, friends, and good morning here from Finland. This is the 24th of July, 2017, and I'm continuing now with Rays and the Initiations, number 93. I suspect I've done about 100 hours here, and some of these are longer than others. So even though it says 93, there are some of them that are 2 hours or 3 hours long. I hope that's not too much of a burden for you. It's a little bit easier for me as I don't have to stop after every hour and send. You know, that's a loss of about an hour of recording time. Well, here we are looking at the initiations. And these initiations are looked at in a different way, not according to the rays so much, but according to an understanding of what the individual passes through. So let's see here. Initiation in the Jordan, the baptism in the Jordan. We finished a rather extensive examination of the first initiation, and now on to the second. The initiation which we are now to study is perhaps one of the most important because it concerns that aspect of the personality which gives the most difficulty to everybody, the emotional or astral body, especially on our planet, who the planetary logos of which has not conquered his astral body and is still subject to aspects of personality. This would, of course, be the case because he's not yet a cosmic initiate of the second degree. Now, you know, those are words to us, but we understand that it indicates something about the natural initiatory progression of, I think we can call them cosmic beings, such as the planetary logoi. Today, the mass of men are swept by the emotions and by a sensitive response to circumstance, you know, like or dislike, attracted or repelled. They are not swept usually by an intelligent reaction to life. The driving away, the repulsion, or the attraction usually precedes intelligent response if it comes at all. The normal and usually violent reaction serves only to increase the confusion and the attending difficulties, producing vortices of uncontrolled energies, glamour, and illusion. So, very confusing and difficult response. Even though it may at the same time produce a saving aspect, in some cases, saving people from that which would truly harm them because the repulsive reaction is so strong, let us say, the violence of the astral testing and the potency of the astral temptation, as it well might well be called, lead to a greatly increased sphere of suffering. And we might say, unnecessary when there is a truly intelligent response. To this must be added the materialistic bias of the many presented solutions, bringing in the force of the world Maya. Maya is a material response, etheric physical response, and thus greatly complicating the problem. So Maya is an etheric physical response. Distressing as all this may be, the significant at the end of this age and the cessation of the Atlantean vibration, interesting, not only is the Pisces vibration ceasing, both in its 2,500-year segment and in its 25,000-year segment. Those are, of course, rounded-off figures. And the quality which is carried over so potent, directly into this Aryan age. It is, however, indicative of the attainment of a definitely racial opportunity. Humanity on a large scale faces the second initiation, or the baptism initiation, control of the astral body. A large scale in its millions, or at least at this time in many thousands. The concept of baptism, oh goodness, how about not going too far here? The concept of baptism is ever associated with that of purification. Water has ever been the symbol of that which purifies. It is also the symbol of the astral plane with its instability, its storms, its tranquilities, its overwhelming emotional reactions, and its pliability, which makes it such a good agent for the deceptive thought-forming faculties of the unregenerate mind. So we're talking about astral thought forms. Not really true thought forms, and much more unstable than mental thought forms. Well, suffice it to say, humanity as a whole is very subject to this area of the planetary expression and of his own expression. It reacts to every impulse, that is, the astral plane does, every desire, every possible magnetic pull coming from the material or substantial form side of life. So it reacts to materiality, maybe more than mentality, depending on how developed the individual may be. In its cycles of tranquility, it reflects equally the good as well as the bad. It is the agent, therefore, of deception when manipulated by the Black Lodge, which so often it is, from that place on the astral plane known as Mara Kara, the place of Mara, the place of illusion, deception. We remember how the Buddha under the Bodhi tree fought with the forces of Mara. So, manipulated by the Black Lodge, or of aspirational reaction when influenced by the Great White Lodge, the spiritual hierarchy of our planet. So, it reflects equally the good and as well the bad. We have to remember that it still has to be overcome. Although aspiration is a scientific method of elevation and does involve the astral body. It is the battleground between the pairs of opposites, and by that we can mean soul and personality, or, you know, just really above and below, good and evil. The problem is complicated by the fact that men have to learn to recognize these opposites before right choice leading to spiritual victory is theirs. And this involves Libra and mental assessment eventually. Today, the desire for peace at any price, for adequate food, warmth, and housing, for the restoration of stability and security, and for the cessation of anxiety controls the mass of human reactions and makes the astral plane loom so large in men's affairs and in world decisions. Well, one can understand how after the Great War, I think this was all written, I think, around 1948, after the Great War, those longings of an astral nature would be prominent. This is so dominantly so that the realization which the mind could reveal and of which the intelligentsia are the custodians is lost to sight and has small influence. This is how it is today. Little mentality in decision making, relatively. And thus, demagogues can sway the masses. The who do not really think, or think clearly. They are still in their, still in their thought, subject to Kama Manas. At the third initiation, the control of the soul illumined mind is finally established, and the soul itself assumes the dominant position and not the phenomenal form. It's sort of the three-fifths point. The majority is there. We might consider five initiations, and when you pass the three-fifths point, you have the majority. The soul illumined mind is in control. All the limits of the form nature are then transcended. How does he describe it? He says, well, there still may be errors. There still may be some difficulties within the personal system, but they are not allowed to interfere with carrying out the divine plan as best one can and with following the divine purpose. It is the vision of this transcendence which is communicated at the time of the second initiation under the symbolism of a positively applied purification. So this is somehow important at the second degree. There is a vision of transcendence. And that is achieved, you know, at the SC. That is achieved at the third initiation, we have been told that the second and third initiation can and often do occur in the same incarnation. A vision of this transcendence is communicated at the time of the second initiation under the symbolism of a positively applied purification. Okay, well, I suppose following the trials in the desert, we do really have the opportunity of creating the soul illumined mind. We do have spiritual intelligence and mental illumination coming in at the second degree, but the question is, does the soul really control the mind? And I guess you'd have to say not yet, or it would not be the case that in rare instances people do veer off towards the left, even after the second initiation. I am not here emphasizing the biblical account of that purificatory process. That summarized symbolically the watery nature of the astral plane and the washing by water of the initiate. This was John the Baptist and the Christ in the Jordan with John baptizing the Christ. It's part of the dramatization that the Christ was offering to man. And I'm going to John the Baptist. He was, I think, the brother of Jesus, obviously not the physical brother of the Christ. At this time, the Christ took over the vehicle of Jesus in an ongoing way. We don't know for how many times it was so, but still in an ongoing manner. I've done it again. Failed to press my chronometer at the beginning. Oh my, so the result is that programs of a somewhat irregular length are emerging from these attempts. Anyway, this baptism in the Jordan, washing by water, It expressed the purely Atlantean form of the initiatory process, giving us the concept of a descent into water and ascent out of water in response to a word of power from on high. The Aryan approach, I think it's approach by fire, to the same initiation has not yet been fully understood. Approach by fire. And that happened there at the Pentecost, as has been described following the crucifixion of Jesus. These are really important developments, and we can't end our study of those amazing events simply with the crucifixion and the resurrection. There was more that followed, and it indicated the way of the modern disciple and the new methods of purification. The words of power are communicated. A word comes after each of these initiations. Maybe one is excluded. I'm forgetting which, but maybe in the higher initiations. But a word of confirmation comes from Sanat Kumara, from the Great Lord. The second initiation is now undergone is, to some extent, one of the most difficult. To some extent, maybe not to all extents, you have to watch every word the Tibetan writes here. It involves purification, but it is purification by fire, symbolically understood. Okay. The occult application of fire to water produces certain most serious and devastating effects. The water under the action of fire is resolved into steam, and the initiate is immersed in fogs and miasmas, the glamours and the mists thus caused. So even though baptism by fire is a higher type of purification, there is an intermediate stage, which is blinding and difficult. Different, D-I-F-C. Out of this fog and out of the glamours, the initiate must emerge. And I would say, you know, before the second initiation can truly be undergone. So already before that initiation is offered, fire is necessarily applied. And it's kind of indicating all the difficulties we pass through in the transition from the Atlantean civilization to that of the Aryan civilization. The first ruled by water, and the second, the Aryan, ruled by fire. Out of the present fog of human affairs, humanity will also emerge eventually. People just don't see clearly. They make their decisions based upon kama manas and by attraction to false possibilities. We see that happening all the time. It does affect our political life. The success of the individual initiate is the guarantee of the racial destiny. First the individual, then the members of the race. So first the advancing individual, and then the members of the race. The complications produced by water in conjunction with fire in these Aryan days, which have been going on for at least a million years, and longer if we consider an overlap period, are far greater than those produced entirely by water in Atlantean times. So, you know, in purification, we now have more to handle correctly. This age is kama-manasic and not simply kamic or strictly astral. Remember, therefore, as you read these words, that I am speaking symbolically. The fire of mind today has to be reckoned with in conjunction with the water of desire, and it is owing to this that much of humanity's problems develop. We can say, we can say that the mind does not yet think clearly, and how about that? And in a detached manner. For the great majority. So, it is because of this that the second initiation has become one of the most difficult which the modern disciple has to take. What more difficult than the third, perhaps, although it is said that a fearful conflict may arise before the third initiation, more difficult than the fourth? Well, maybe the way the fourth initiation is approached, clear-eyed, as D.K. describes it, and not subject to emotional influence. The result, however, of the modern initiatory process is of a much higher order. Well, always there will be an ascent. There will be greater difficulty, but greater accomplishment. This statement is related to the emerging fact that the hierarchy and its personnel in process of assembling will be of a much higher order than that previously responsible for human guidance. So, always there is an improvement in quality and greater demands upon those who would accomplish stages which still have the same name, but which are much more difficult. Difficult than heretofore. A more advanced humanity demands a more advanced hierarchy, of course, and hierarchical supervision. So this has ever been the case. So the whole is ever moving upwards in vibratory quality or rate. The evolutionary process covers all that is. Even Sanat Kumari is learning and advancing from a relative imperfection to perfection, and this is indicating the becoming sacred of our planet. This baptism of fire, to which reference is made in the Western scriptures, carries with it inevitably the connotation of pain, and this to an extent hitherto unknown. Even a casual glance at world affairs will reveal the truth of the statement. Purification is much harder and more demanding now. Purification. So what, therefore, is really happening, and what are the major facts involved? Much will depend upon my answer and upon your interpretation of it. I would ask you, consequently, to give careful consideration to my replies to these two questions. The two questions, what really is happening, and what are the major facts involved in this more advanced type of purification, which, you know, really for disciples such as we are, many of whom can presume to have taken the first degree, or they would not be so committed to the beautification of their lives and to the teaching and application of that teaching. This is their path, the path towards the control of the powerful, demanding, influential astral body, and thus the taking of the second degree. So what will DK reply to these questions? What are our replies to these questions. Under the influence of the Piscean cycle, which is now in process of termination, by the time the 21st century is completed, the sixth ray of idealism or devotion was predominantly active, and still, as I've said, will be active in a higher and larger sense for another 21,000 years, part of something like 40,000 years fourth ray cycle. So we can see what a tremendous study it will be to see how what cycles are active and how they overlap and become subsidiary to still greater cycles. This is the ray of one-pointed determination, and from one angle, the ray of blind procedure. We do it, we don't know why, we're just devoted to doing it, and we've been told to do it a certain way, and thus we do, without enough intelligence applied. The individual, the group or humanity sees only one aspect of reality at any one time, and because of man's present point in the evolutionary process, usually the least desirable. So it is a limited vision. Not inclusive, and includes the negative even more than the positive. All else is sealed to them. They vision only one picture. Well, it certainly reduces complication, doesn't it? And in general, I have to say the sixth ray type does not like complication. The horizon is limited to only one point of the compass, speaking esoterically, you know, the 360-degree view, the panoramic view has no place. Okay, so panoramic view has no place. To the mass of humanity, the aspect of reality which was visioned and for which men lived and died was the material world. Material comfort, material possessions, and material enterprises. To this, the labor movement today and the tendencies already apparent in the United Nations bear incontrovertible testimony. In the past, the vision was material and materialistic, a very great limitation. To a much smaller group of human beings, the world of the intelligence appears paramount, and the concrete mind is the desired ruler or controlling factor. And we say maybe many of us have passed through this, and we can remember perhaps the phases of our life when certain objectives seemed paramount, but they were not the ultimate objectives by any means. All, therefore, remains within the area of material control and interest, all still part of the personality and not of the soul. The solar plexus center is consequently the dominant factor because, even in the case of the intelligentsia, it is a desire for material well-being, for territorial possessions, and for planned governmental and economic material decisions which control and motivate the individual, the group, and the nation. So for the intelligent human being, materiality may still rule. Well, we have to outgrow these experiences with lesser things. After many lives and many disappointments, we do gradually outgrow a longing for the type of experience which the personality per se can offer. Says the Tibetan, these are not necessarily wrong, but under the present emotional desire concept, they are placed in the foremost position and are regarded as causal in their nature. Nevertheless, they are fundamentally secondary in their nature and are effectual in their essential nature, placing the emphasis upon the word effect. So this is a interesting use. These objectives are definitely definitely secondary and are not causal, but are in the nature of effects, thus effectual. Humanity, even in its advanced brackets, is not yet able to think on causal levels. This would indicate the third degree. So what is the basic goal for the initiate who has taken the second initiation? I would ask you to transit in consciousness from the concept that the process of initiation is a consummation of effort to the higher and better concept that it is initiatory in effect and marks a beginning and not a consummation. This is a very important statement and has everything to do with what is possible in a new type of experience following the initiation. So it is that which lies ahead rather than that as a consummation. Always we're thinking ahead, and we have the idea of the masters that for us, the masters, all things are new. Ever the new is more important. This is an idea advanced very much in Agni Yoga. You can see how this would be related to Moria Remembrance Day in Aries, March the 24th. So, an initiation, initiatory in effect, ongoing in effect, rather than consummatory, though it is that too, to a degree, but things never stop, and that's where a huge mistake is made by some, thinking that the last revelation has been given. It may be comforting to the concrete mind, which is inherently lazy and doesn't want to forge ahead into new possibilities, but it is not true, it is not accurate. What therefore lies ahead of the initiate? What therefore lies ahead of the initiate who has entered the purificatory water, or rather fire? To what is he pledged? And we might say that all initiates are pledged, just as disciples are pledged. The pledged disciple, pledged initiate, pledged disciple, initiate. A promise is made, and one adheres to it. What is to happen within the area of livingness? I want you to familiarize yourself with that phrase, with the area of livingness, the area upon which the consciousness is concentrated, and the energies to which the individual is limited, or to which he is primarily exposed. So he wants us to understand this term, the area of livingness. I want you to familiarize yourself with that phrase and what results will take place within the mechanism with which he approaches the place of initiation, because at every confirmed initiation, the mechanism changes and is stabilized with respect to regard to new possibilities. These are the factors of importance, and these are the aspects of the life process which should condition him. At the close of the initiatory process, certain energies and divine aspects should be recognized by him as now playing a part in his thinking and his purposes, which did not before. Energies which heretofore, even if present, were quiescent and not controlling. So new energies are emerging as stably present and more important than here 2-4. They now control, whereas before they were present, but relatively latent and quiescent. Before him lies the third initiation of the Transfiguration. So facing him is a great transition from an emotional, aspirational focus to an intelligent, thinking focus. He has, theoretically at least, cast off the control of the astral body and nature. This indicates, of course, the struggles through which so many pass. They understand the theory, but can't quite make theory into applied reality. Well, I suppose maybe a number of people will recognize this. Much still remains to be done. Old desires, ancient astral reactions, and habitual emotions are still powerful, but he has developed a new attitude to them and a new perspective on the astral body. So they do arise, but they do not control. But do not control. Water, fire, steam, glamour, delusion, misinterpretation and emotional continuity, ongoing emotional reaction, I suppose, still means something specific and undesirable to him. Water, fire, steam, glamour, delusion, misinterpretation. Gosh, he's pretty well gives us here that to which the majority of humanity is subject. But hopefully, if we pass this degree, we can begin seeing these things in a new light, and they will no longer have a controlling potency. He is now negative to their appeal and positive to the higher demanding focus, and we might say responsive to a higher demanding focus. That which he now loves and longs for, desires and plans for, lies in another and higher dimension than the astral material. So he is, he is transcending Camomanus for sure. He has, through his willingness to pass through the second initiation, and note the term willingness, so this is a choice. Through his willingness to pass through the second initiation, struck the first blow at his innate selfishness and has demonstrated the power to think in wider, more inclusive terms. So Mars, the planet of selfishness, gives way to Jupiter, ruling in an inclusive manner, the heart center. The group begins to mean more to him than himself. Willingness, let's just say the will is always involved in making initiation possible. So definite efforts along a prescribed line must be willfully followed. We even learned this when we look at the Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane, his contact with the great and higher will. It was, for him, the Tibetan tells us, a real effort, relinquishment. So what has happened technically speaking? The energies of the solar plexus are being transferred from the major clearinghouse below the diaphragm to the heart center, one of the three major centers into which all the lower energies must transfer. The second initiation suggests the empowering of the heart over desire, love over desire. But there is much, of intelligence coming into focus. At the first initiation, well, which also involves, you know, both of these initiations involve both the heart center and the throat center. From the sacral center to the throat at the first initiation, but the heart center is definitely involved in an expansion of that center. From the solar plexus to the heart at the second initiation, but the throat center is involved, bringing in a new type of intelligence, spiritual intelligence, and mental illumination. Not the full type of soul-infused illumination that will occur at the transfiguration, but on its way. At the first initiation, he was granted a vision of a higher creativity, and the energy of the sacral center began its slow ascent to the throat center. And this takes place over quite a few lives between the first initiation and the second initiation. At the second initiation, he is granted a vision of a higher focus. And this takes place in the larger, and his place in the larger whole begins slowly to reveal itself. Yet, this process may be consummated in only one incarnation. So it's a very different situation in general, the progress from the first to second compared with the progress, much more rapid, between the second and the third. A new creativity and a new focus become his immediate goals, and for him, life can never be the same. Actually, he enters the stream. He is carried forward by the ashram to which he is related. It is the beginning of truly rapid progress. Page 84 and 85 of Initiation Human and Solar, the second, third, and fourth initiations, sometimes even usually, and that's the astonishing statement, being taken in the same life. The old physical attitudes and desires may at times assume control. Selfishness may continue to play a potent part in his life expression, but underlying these and subordinating them will be found a deep dissatisfaction about things as they are and an agonizing realization of failure. Maybe this comes in particularly, this realization of failure, at the time of the second initiation and following. It is at this point that the disciple begins to learn the uses of failure and to know certain fundamental distinctions between that which is natural and objective and that which is supernatural and subjective. Well, he's heading into true subjectivity because the soul is subjective and he will have a true causal body, egoic lotus soul focus at the third degree. But this is the time when recognition of a failure is perhaps the most acute. But he learns also to transcend this type of weight upon him. This psychological weight upon his consciousness, and eventually will enter, will conquer this tendency towards failure by proving himself over the temptations in the desert. He proves himself over the temptations in the desert temptations. The world, the flesh, and the devil no longer prevent him, his mind, from becoming soul-infused. Do these ideas make the concept of initiation more useful to you and more practical? I think so. Let's hope so. It invites us to reconsider a new creativity. Well, the throat center is involved, isn't it? I mean, not just at the first initiation, but if you're going to have mental illumination and spiritual intelligence, the throat center is involved. If you're going to begin building the Antikarana, a new type of creativity is involved. A new type of creativity is needed in the building of the Antikarana. Yes, and we may be swept by the old voices which come and which seem to take over for a while, but then they are subdued and transcended, and we recognize the difference between habit, what we used to do, and that towards which we are truly striving, and the striving wins. Any initiation which does not find interpretation in daily reactions is of small service and basically unreal. So many people imagine perhaps they are initiated in some way. Many people's lives do not change, even though they imagine themselves as initiate. It is the unreality of its presentation which has led to the rejection of the Theosophical Society as an agent of the hierarchy, note at this time. This leaves open the door to greater possibilities. Of course, I can imagine that the members of the Theosophical Society reading Alice Bailey's words did not appreciate them, because they have a way of thinking that their presentation of the wisdom under Blavatsky is as far as the wisdom can go. But of course, that is inherently illogical, and anybody reading with an open mind will recognize the master's touch in the Alice Bailey material. Earlier and prior to its ridiculous emphasis upon initiation and initiates, and prior to its recognition of the probationary disciples as full initiates, and what started all that? You know, it certainly wasn't HBB who even had misgivings about having presented the whole subject of the masters and initiation to the members of the society before that. And I suppose at the time when HBB was more in charge, the society did good work. Even Annie Besant was an initiate, I suspect, and powerful, maybe, you know, not as high as HBB, but still had the right kind of orientation. So how did this happen? We might say ambition became more powerful. And glamour and its distortions entered. It, however, failed to recognize mediocrity and to realize that no one takes initiation and passes through these crises without a previous demonstration of a wide usefulness. Oh, that's so important. And trained intelligent capacity. So you cannot make of those who have not achieved these things, you cannot make of them full initiates or somehow pretend that they are, regardless of what the personality may want and hope for. This may not so much be the case where the first initiation is concerned, maybe wide usefulness and trained intelligent capacity and so forth. But where the second initiation is involved, there must ever be a background of useful, dedicated life and an express determination to enter the field of world service, even if one has not fully entered. There must also be humility and a voice realization of the divinity of in all men. So a sense, a proportion precedes the second initiation. So we are being realistic here and not inflationary under the influence of personal ambition. To these requirements, the so-called initiate of the Theosophical Society, with the exception of Mrs. Bassan, did not conform. So lives of no special merit were demonstrated by the average would-be initiate of the TS. Well, it must be hard for Theosophical members to read this kind of thing, but the master has to protect the teaching by being truthful. I would not call attention to their prideful demonstration were it not that the same claims are being made and the same delusions presented to the public and by many who are completely immersed in glamour. I mean, we have only to read on the internet all the various, well, I would call them innocuous, but they're not innocuous. They are certainly feeble channelings of the masters, so-called, and anybody could write them, and many could write something much better using their own abilities. The problem of freedom from the limitations of matter should now be considered and the entire theme be rendered practical. So this is what initiation really is. Freedom from the limitations of matter. And by matter, we mean everything on the lower 18 subplanes and even later on the higher three subplanes. Well, we'll certainly have plenty of theory when these things actually begin to occur for us. We will be well backed up by understanding, just as he tells us, well, better study white magic very carefully now in an academic and mental way, because when I actually give you the effective formulas, then you will be much more ready for them. There is perhaps an ultimate opinion that in the realm, it is the realm of the emotions and the susceptibility to emotional reaction which constitute the major human limitation, both from the individual angle and also from the national angle, from that of the national angle. Well, you know, the Atlantean reaction has been with us a long time and has led to many poor decisions against the divine plan. It is everywhere realized that the demagogue, for instance, who sways public opinion is one also who and emphatically plays on human emotions as well as upon human selfishness. Well, we're seeing it. We're seeing it now. Let's just say, thinking perhaps that we've outlived all this, but you might say, have we really outlived this? And Answer is no, we have not. Given that so many people inhabiting maybe the Aryan root race form still are affected by the Atlantean consciousness. So let's see. I think something here is... Yeah. As the race progresses towards mental expression, this distorting influence will become increasingly less important, and once the mass is composed of the millions of so-called men in the street, definitely begin to think, the power of the demagogic approach will have disappeared. We have... okay. We have some today who are attacking the usefulness of a college education, perhaps realizing that their power is limited by those who can think. I was just amazed to read this. Is a college education really useful? Obviously, these are the forces of ignorance, and they are using the forces of selfishness still found in a concentrated manner in humanity. The major battle in the world today is that of the freedom of the average citizen to think for himself and to come to his own decisions and conclusions. Well, this becomes possible through the internet to a degree. This becomes possible through the internet when properly used. Of course, it can be poorly used and then contribute to the success of the demagoguery. It is here that the major quarrel between the Great White Lodge and the Black Lodge is to be found. The Black Lodge does not trust the sound thinking, the potentially sound thinking of the average human being, and wants to keep them in a slave-like condition. Okay. We remember DK tells us the heart of humanity is sound, though oft asleep. So the major battle is about freedom, the law of freedom from Sirius. It's obvious that the Black Lodge is not responding in any positive way, and I wonder if there is any other way to respond to the Sirian energy. It is a battle in which humanity itself is the decisive factor, and for this reason the Black Lodge is working through the group, which is controlling the destiny of Russia and also through the Zionist movement. So here, under this discussion of the overcoming of the astral body, he brings in Russia under dictatorship, which has to a certain extent, maybe considerably, subsided. And then he brings in those who wish to reclaim the so-called Holy Land for the Jews, as if they were the major inhabitants of that area, and it really belongs to them as it did more than 2,000 years ago. The leaders of the USSR are working intelligently and potently against human freedom, and particularly against freedom of thought. Well, this is how it used to be, and we have seen progress, have we not? at least in the Russian people I've met, there has been, I would say, tremendous progress. Communism per se has no such objective. It is the totalitarian policies of the national rulers which are so disastrous, plus their ambition and hatred of freedom. Well, you know, it challenges their control and the fulfillment of their desires for power. Well, now, and now we go back, you know, 70 years. Zionism today stands for aggression and for the use of force. And the keynote is permission to take what you want, irrespective of other people or of their inalienable rights. Well, this is a harsh critique and is shared now by many. And I think it's difficult to discriminate Zionism from the values of Judaism, but that discrimination must be made, even though Judaism, Christianity, and also Islam are considered to be outmoded religions, at least from the perspective of the ageless wisdom. These points of view are against the position of the spiritual leaders of humanity and therefore the leaders of the Zionist movement and the group of men who direct and control the policies of Russia are against the policies of the spiritual hierarchy and are contrary to the lasting good of mankind. So again, what do we see? We see the hierarchy taking sides, apparently, always against the policies of those who are directly influenced by the Black Lodge. The freedom of the human spirit, the freedom to think, govern, and worship as innate human instinctual human desire, as innate human, instinctual human desire may dictate, under the influence of the evolutionary process, the liberty to decide on the required forms of government or religion, these are the rightful prerogatives of mankind. And for them, hierarchy stands. We can say that. For these, hierarchy stands, and again, those who would deprive humanity of these possibilities, and again, we have to go back to the four freedoms which put forth as much of the will of Shambhala presently as humanity can understand. The freedom of worship is there, and freedom of speech, and freedom from want, and freedom from fear. All of these are the innate prerogatives, the rightful prerogatives of mankind. Any group of men or any form of government which fails to recognize this inherent right runs counter to the principle governing, which governs the Great White Lodge. So I think we will, however, see the reduction of these attitudes. It seems that in many ways, humanity is moving towards this. But we have the picture here given 70 years ago, and we've seen what developments have occurred as a result. And we definitely have a world out of balance with so many of the negative factors of Islam having re-arisen, perhaps in opposition to the denial of these prerogatives by the Zionist movement. We have an unstable world in that respect, and there were so many factors in Islam which I think were dying away under the influence of reformers such as Ataturk, but now they're being reawakened, and that is a retrogressive tendency. The menace to world freedom today lies in the known policies. What about the unknown policies? But anyway, even the known policies of the rulers of the USSR and the devious lying machinations of the Zionists. He didn't take a very rosy view of these things, obviously. In neither group is there any true spiritual potency, and both are doomed to failure, even though they may succeed from the angle of material gain. From the spiritual angle, they are doomed, and as the spirit is coming in greater power, these movements are doomed. The leaders of the Russian enterprise against the freedom of the individual are doomed, because inherently man is free and fundamentally divine, and it is assured from the long-range vision that masses of men in Russia and in the communistically inclined satellite states will inevitably react divinely and potently. So it is assured, not assumed, it is assured that there will be a potent divine reaction. The truly communistic platform is sound. It is brotherhood in action, and it does not, in its original platform, run counter to the spirit of the Christ. The imposition of intellectual and formal communism by a group of ambitious and sometimes evil men is not sound. It does not adhere to the true communistic platform, but is based on personal ambitions, love of power, and on interpretations of the writings of Lenin and Marx, which are also personal and run counter to the meaning of these two men. So Lenin and Marx had writings which in themselves were not evil, but were interpreted in an evil, selfish manner. Just as the theologians of the church interpret the words of the Christ in a fashion which has no relation to his original intention, the rulers of Russia are not truly working for the good of the people any more than academic Zionism is working and carrying out its projects for humanitarian reasons. So, no real spirituality in these groups, and no real humanitarianism, but selfishness for their own purposes, love of power, and the desire to fulfill their own selfish aims. But the people hold the ultimate triumph in their hands, for the heart of the people in all nations is basically sound. That is a reasonable and really important statement to understand. Fundamentally good and God-inclined, these the rulers of the communistic regime forget. So, there is definitely hope. Well, I think what I will do now is to bring this one to an end. It's about an hour, a little more, because I failed to turn on my chronometer, but let's just say this is the end of Ray's Initiation Webinar Commentary number 93. The day is the 24th of July, and always it's a question of, we're as far as 681. So 673 to 681. That's how far we've gone. It seems like actually quite a bit. Usually it's not the number of pages that I'm able to get through, but you know, some of these are not describing such technical occult factors, which seem to take more time to explain. Suffice it to say, there is evil in the world. And it is doomed because of the basic soundness of the heart of humanity. And hierarchy does set itself against these forms of expression, which are inspired basically by the Black Lodge. So, and the next will be beginning of Rays and Initiations Webinar Commentary, 681. 681 to something. And it's just a question of... all right. When I will get to this. So thank you, everybody. And we're going to continue this discussion of DK's view of the machinations of the Zionist movement and the difficulty that it has led to right now, a very grave difficulty with the re-arising of the less positive, actually some very negative factors within Islam, which is not, of course, to say that the religion does not have some excellent ideas, but always we have to be careful of the misinterpretation of those who follow afterwards. Marx and Lenin have been misinterpreted, even the Christ has been misinterpreted, and Muhammad, I think, was a pretty violent man in many respects, but I think maybe a number of things that he wrote have also been misinterpreted. So, according to the selfish, preservation of the selfish tendencies of those who offered the interpretations. So we'll move on now, and thank you for attending. We'll start with number 94 when I can do that. Okay, bye for now.